Hypnoidal, light state of hypnosis, idiomotor, we've already addressed, subconscious involuntary muscle movements, induction, the formal process or ritual of creating a hypnotic state. Note the word ritual. We'll come back to that later. Indirect suggestion. Direct suggestion is a very literal format of this is what is happening, this is what's occurring. Indirect suggestion is the non-literal format, perhaps in the way of metaphor or permissive delivery, which understand there are moments where you've heard me giving indirect suggestions by way of embedded commands. I could tell you to go ahead and relax your entire body, but that's not necessary. Is an indirect suggestion, but marked inside of it is that embedded command. And I'll be pointing these out as we roll forward. We'll hit this briefly. Initial sensitizing event, ISE, an age regression. That's going to be the cause of the event. We're in for the home stretch. The rest of these words go rather quickly. Kinesthetic, process of feeling. Mesmerism, yay, we've talked about it. As the animal magnetism word fell away, we since then labeled it as mesmerism. Monoideism, the man who came up with the word hypnosis ended up deciding he didn't like the word hypnosis because it had the word sleep inside of it, and people began the simplification of the story would be that, oh, Dr. Braid discovered this state of sleep, and he's having to backtrack. No, 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 it's not sleep. The mind is focused on one outcome, one idea. One idea. Let's call it mono-idea-ism. Horrible name. Chances are none of you would have signed up for the mono-idea-ism intensive. So it sucks. Neuro-linguistic programming, NLP for short. This originally was the brain of John Grinder and Richard Bandler. It began as a study of subjective experience, the structure of it, which to give you the basic idea of that, all of us in this room have interacted with tables in our lives. There's a bold statement. However, we've all interacted with different tables than the other people in this room. So as I look at that table, I am sorting that table for all the tables that I've been around. And Luke and Becky are sitting at the table, sorting that table for all the tables they've been around. So that is a physical table, but then again, we could argue how physical is matter, because matter is actually a rather fluid thing, and what exactly is solid? There is no spoon. So as we're looking at that physical thing, we're sorting it in different perceptions, but the perception is only the illusion of the experience. What the hell does this have to do anything? I feel anxious when I get up to speak. And this person says they feel anxious when they get up to speak. Yet the word anxious is a nominalization. It's a noun. We have taken an action word and turned it into a physical object. However, to ask us, how do you feel that anxious feeling in your body, you could get two completely different answers. So when you feel that fear, what does that feel like? Is part of the process of NLP of breaking down the subjective experience of what that feeling actually is for that individual. And we're no longer treating the word. We're no longer treating the diagnosis. Instead, we're diving into how do you do that? What images are going through your mind? What are the sensations in your body? Now we've got the roadmap into that issue. As Richard Bandler would say, by asking the right questions, you can get the roadmap behind how your client becomes depressed. That way you can go home and depress yourself the exact same way. Now, that way then you also have the roadmap into it, and the roadmap into it is also often the roadmap out of it as well. And it's all done from this modeling of human excellence to no longer label something as being a problem. So imagine that person with a, let's call it a social phobia. Whenever they're in a big group of people, they feel terrified, they shut down. It's an interesting thought to realize they don't forget to feel that way. Look at that as a very consistent pattern that is so reliable. There's never the moment of, oh yeah, I was so busy I forgot to feel terrified of a group. No, it's just consistently. And to look at that as a resource in the mind, as opposed to a locksmith is coming here during our lunch break today because I can't find my mailbox key. Yay, $85 mistake. So to consistently always perform, so to label that now as a skill, and to take that skill and drag it over to another part of life, That's what the principles of NLP are all about, modeling that subjective experience, tracking that excellence, and finding the resources out of something and using those resources to our advantage. That's what it's about. I very much am a neurolinguistic hypnotist, and there's a lot of NLP principles in this course, while not necessarily being the NLP course, because the history of NLP, they were tracking primarily three modern therapists of the day: Virginia Satir, who is a well-known family therapist; Fritz Perls, who was the founder of what's called Gestalt therapy, which is very much this ego state therapy of sit in this chair, speak as yourself; sit in that chair, speak as your father; and Milton Erickson, a modern hypnotist of the day. So this is one of those weird moments where we can say that all of hypnosis fits inside of NLP, but not all of NLP fits inside of hypnosis, because there was modeling work that was being done outside of the hypnosis community, which is why the NLP course is its own separate thing. Neuroplasticity, the brain's ability to reorganize itself by forming new neural connections throughout life. And this is the modern language of change. Just because something was one way is no reason it has to be that way now. Parts therapy, basically it's an ego state gestalt style therapy. While the most popular version in our community is the Roy Hunter, Charles Tebbets parts mediation variation, parts therapy is a category. You're basically dividing the client into individual parts, doing the work with the parts, integrating them back together. Patter, the words we say while in hypnosis. Phobia, the interesting definition of phobia, it is the fear of the fear. I've talked about tables, and I feel uncomfortable because I have a fear of tables, and because I'm sitting in this room, I don't feel comfortable because of that table. Fear. I'm not going to go in that room because there might be a table. Phobia. Note, though, as a non-medical practitioner, that is a medically protected word. We work on fears. And if you want the fastest method for me to yell at you when you have me look at your website down the road, it's when you've printed the word phobia and I go, "You idiot, didn't you listen to me?" I will probably say it more positively. However, Damon, enjoy your phobia. There's a suggestion. Post-hypnotic interview, one of the most overlooked parts of the hypnotic session. Because the suggestion to emerge is a suggestion just like the rest of the process. So the things we say immediately upon emerging from hypnosis is one of the most powerful moments to make use of. It is a hyper-suggestible experience. So you'll find I am continuously pummeling away positive suggestions. Remember the old story about yesterday? Hey, before we get started. Well, the opposite is also true. Hey, now that we've wrapped up, we're still working. Pre-hypnosis interview, it's the pre-time as well. Presupposition, we've talked about this. It's the assumption before the assumption. On the drive home today, I've got to swing by the PetSmart over near the mall. My dog chewed through her collar. She was out in the backyard, and her leash actually got stuck on something. The kids were playing with her, so I got to buy a new collar. I tell the story. Would you start to doubt whether or not that story is true? Yeah, probably. Maybe it's the old storyteller game of it's something that happened years ago. Would you stop and question whether or not I have a dog? Probably not, because that just flies under the radar. Getting caught up in the details of the story, I do have a dog. Her name is Blossom. She's very odd. Pre-talk, we addressed yesterday. It's the stuff we say before the hypnotic process. Into the home stretch, last page. Pyramiding. If compounding of suggestions is layering techniques on top of each other for change, pyramiding is a method of layering one hypnotic induction on top of the other without emerging. Which, when we get to the Dave Elman induction, it's all about pyramiding. The Dave Elman induction is actually doing about a dozen hypnotic inductions, rapid fire, one after the other, without bringing them out each and every time. More of the history on that later. Rapport, again, I'm not going to teach you that because I didn't get you in rapport yesterday by making you become more aware with the person in front of you, and unconsciously you already got in sync with them. But this isn't a class about rapport, so we're not going to talk about that. Yeah, you're already doing it. Resistance. Ooh, get ready for a rant. This is one of the biggest conversations in all helping modalities, not just hypnosis. People who come in and are resistant to the process. Now understand, let's draw a line here. There is resistance to change, and if that didn't exist, they wouldn't be in front of you. So the client is resistant to the change, otherwise they would have made the change for themselves already, Fair statement. I want to make this thing happen, and then suddenly I decide, here's the strategy of how I'm going to do that, and now I'm doing it. Okay, good. No problem there. As opposed to, I really want to do this, but for some reason I'm not able to. That's resistance to change. The change process with your clients is always marked by resistance to change. It's not always conscious, it's most often unconscious. The rant comes about with the resistance to the process. And I spread this statement now out to all helping modalities, because I'll go there. There are no resistant clients. There are only inflexible practitioners. Resistance is a result of, in our language, an incomplete pre-talk, a lack of rapport, or a lack of understanding of what the process is supposed to be. That's where resistance occurs. So it's where the practitioner is not willing to go above and beyond and do something different. There are communities, and I spread this far beyond hypnosis, that would jump to the concept of secondary gain, which is where that the client is holding on to the problem because there's some benefit to be gained by holding on to the problem. Well, I'm not going to go to the physical therapist because as long as my wife is bringing me dinner at the sofa and I get to watch TV and I don't have to do any chores, I'm not going to get up. Is that a conscious decision? Sometimes it is. Most often it might not be. So it's a place where, again, the practitioner is not willing to try something different, do something different to go and make the change. So there's some schools of thought that jump to secondary gain too quickly. And understand, that is the last place I'm going to go. Does it exist? Absolutely. But secondary gain is a moment of hallelujah. We found a place of subconscious resistance. Let's go in and release it. Game on. That's what your mindset should be. So I want you to be horribly smug when you hear people talking about resistant clients and secondary gain, because it is an overblown conversation in all modalities of personal change, not just hypnosis. It's definitely an issue in hypnosis, but it's the same conversation in personal coaching, physical therapy, personal training, psychology, counseling, psychiatry, all these things. Oh no, he's not taking the pills because he'd rather hold on to the problem. Well, maybe there's something you could have done to actually better motivate that compliance step in terms of navigating the process and carrying through with the medication as well. Is this a common conversation in psychology?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Would you agree with the statements I just made?
Yes.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah.
That it's the scapegoat. It's the out. Oh.
And that's what the out.
Not my fault.
Says.
Yeah.
Rather than the same thing, it's more about me being flexible.
Right. In all of my communication, personal change, education, interaction at a shopping mall trying to find something, business, I will always work from the mindset and hear this negative statement as a positive, it's my fault. How can I better phrase this suggestion, this question, this statement to better help you step into my model of the world and help me get through this conversation? I'm always going to blame myself first, and from that, though, I don't butt heads with people that much. I'm going to ask the question in a very respectful way. I'm going to rephrase something in a much clearer way. So rather than jump right away to secondary gain, it's the whole, no, what can I better do to help you create this change? I refuse to identify my client walking in the door. Jeffrey Ronning is a stage hypnotist I referenced, and he would teach his stage hypnosis students. And his book is in the back of my book as a resource. It's an amazing, well-written book. He would tell the stage hypnotist, it's all about two hypnotic presuppositions. I am going to have more volunteers than I possibly need to pull off this show. And those people who come up here are going to give me all the feedback I need to get them to the appropriate levels of hypnosis to help you create this change, to help you do the program. Which is all, what's the fear of the stage hypnotist? Oh, no one's going to volunteer. What if I can't get them into hypnosis? But to walk out on that stage, I'm going to have more people than I need. And they're going to show me what I need to see to get them where they need to be. I bring the same to my clients. You are motivated. You are so ready to create this change. You are, what's the phrase? Sick and tired of feeling sick and tired. You're in that beautiful place. There's a magical place in the mind that we can label enough is enough. And that's why you're in front of me today. and you're going to demonstrate everything that I need to see to choose the right methods to get you into hypnosis and help you get through this change as well. Let's have some fun. And I go into every client interaction with that mindset. And oddly enough, with that mindset, I have only ever had two clients I could label as resistant to hypnosis. And one of them was here a month ago, story later. but it's a guy who I just said, and I labeled it, and he went, "You're exactly right." And I went, "Okay, hang on a second." I turned around, I hit a few buttons, and I went, "Your money has been refunded. But I paid you, I know, and it's back in your account. In fact, I hit the button, it's already been released as well. Why? Because I'm not going to let you pay me and say this stuff works. Why? Because you just told me you have no interest in quitting smoking, and the only reason you're here is because the woman out there in the lobby dragged you here and you lied to me on the phone. Your words, right? Yeah. Good. I wish you the best. That's it? Yeah. When you're ready, I look forward to having you back here. But I'm here. I know. And now you can go somewhere else. When you're ready to produce this change." But that was really at its core. That wasn't even, he was being resistant to the hypnosis at its core because he didn't want to make the change. So the resistance to change was overpowering that, which was the fastest session I'd had here in quite some time. Revivification, we've talked about. Hypnotic seal, that's a gray mammal that does one of these and goes arf, arf, and they catch, no. Cool animal. Hypnotic seal, it is rarely seen. I will boldly make a statement. You will never run into this, but I talk about it here. The hypnotic seal is considered unethical, and I agree with that statement, by all major hypnosis organizations. And they tell me I shouldn't even talk about it or teach it. However, you're not going to run into this. I will teach you the method to break it, should you run into it. Because actually teaching you how to break it, oddly enough, teaches you probably one of the most effective strategies I've ever found for eliminating negative self-talk. So I think it's, given the history of it, very important to teach you the history behind it and also how to break it as well. Why would anyone want to make use of it? The early vaudeville stage hypnotist, legend goes at one point, was employing the hypnotic seal to not have competition. If I could make it so someone could not be hypnotized by someone other than me, and now they volunteer for your show, well, clearly I'm the hypnotist you got to hire. When the medical profession was catching wind of the lay hypnotist, how do we guarantee that we can protect hypnosis for ourselves? No other person but a medical professional can get you into hypnosis. Yet there's the anecdote of the man going into emergency dental surgery that was allergic to all forms of anesthesia, and the doctor had been trained by both Dave Ellman and Milton Erickson. However, the patient did not identify the doctor as being the dentist as being a medical professional, because from him, his cynical perspective, dentist isn't a doctor, it's the guy who cleans your teeth. And a seal had been placed on him, but could not go into hypnosis because of that, and it was a very excruciating procedure. So that's kind of the brief history. More on that later. Into the home stretch. Somnambulism, a deep state of hypnosis. Also, from our understanding, a working state of hypnosis. Now, take note, the word somnambulism is also the word for sleepwalking, which is where the word came from. Here's the early practitioner working with his client, and it's literally the moment of Luke is deeply hypnotized, and I suddenly went, you know, this would probably be a lot easier if you were sitting in that chair rather than this chair. And suddenly Luke stood up, walked across the room, sat down. Never seen that before. Sleepwalking, that's where the word somnambulism came from. Let's draw a line here. There are two variations of the word somnambulism, because there is the somnambulist, which is the person who, no matter what technique you use, is going to go into somnambulism. However, in my opinion and the opinion of this course, everybody has the ability, everybody who is willing to go into a state of hypnosis with you has the ability to achieve a level of somnambulism, which, just as a side note, this little red line that I put up here, which we haven't talked about yet, that's the official line, which brings about some wonderful nerdy George Orwell quotes. All levels of hypnosis are created equal. some are more equal than others. What level of hypnosis do you need to produce change? Any. All levels are created equal. Some are more equal than others. I'd rather be in that neighborhood, but I will make use of the lighter states if that's all I can get. So the somnambulist is the person who naturally would go to somnambulism no matter whatever technique you use to get there. However, by using techniques that you're going to be learning today, we will be able to guide all of our clients into somnambulism. By the way, if you ever see older terminology that says only 40% of the population can go into levels of hypnosis, read that as being the natural somnambulist. By the way, I have already profiled all of you. Some of you are natural somnambulists. All of you will be achieving somnambulism at some point in this course. And I am greedy and jealous of those people. I can't track it whether or not I was always the somnambulist. Now I definitely am. But understand from a very friendly statement, I was observing all of your practice yesterday and profiling all of you, because when I do that demo at the end of day one, I want to make sure it lands. And I have already labeled every single one of you in this room, and I won't tell you yet which ones you are, because you'll figure it out for yourself. It's not cheating, it's stacking the deck. Subconscious mind we've covered, subsequent sensitizing event, SSE, these are reinforcement events after the event where that caused it. Suggestibility, it is the measurable state of a person's ability to accept hypnotic direction. Here is a statement that if we can get this across to all people who learn and make use of and train hypnosis, we would all finally have a common language and we'd be better to communicate and grow what we do. To go deeper into hypnosis is to go deeper into suggestibility. That's what that means. Now, from the client's perspective, it may mean something a little different. We'll talk about that later. But to go deeper into hypnosis in our conversation in this room is to go deeper into suggestibility. Suggestions, it's a method of influence in the hypnotic state. It can be words, it could be concepts, it can be ideas, it can be outcomes, it can be anything that we do inside of the experience. And the last word, trance, altered state of consciousness. Again, given the number of connotations of this word, I will very rarely use it. Take note, though, that there are certain words we don't want to use in the process. I probably want to avoid using the term under hypnosis. The word under has a connotation of being under a spell, under control. However, if it's the second week and then Nikki's back in my office and you go, wow, last week while I was under hypnosis and I was deep asleep, I was feeling fantastic, I will use the words back at you. Oh yeah, well, while you're under hypnosis today and while you're asleep in the process, here's what's going to be going great. It's like my rule of profanity. The moment you use it, game on, I get to use it as well. However, I will not invite those words into the process just because they have different connotations. Well, in the trance state last week, I had a guy last week say that. Oh, well, I was in trance last week. Here's what happened. Absolutely. Well, in trance today, you know, it's the vampire rule. Once you bring it in, I'm allowed to use it. However, the most important vocabulary word is break. Let's take 10.